This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, committed to helping families across America pursue their college savings goals, on the web at putnam.com/529. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
There were two big economic speeches on the calendar today, one by a guy who can change things, the other by a guy who maybe can't. The president and the chairman of the Fed were the two, but which one do you suppose is which? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Ally Bank, offering Pop Money, a way to pay other people online by sending an email or text. Learn more at allybank.com. And by CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's Thursday, today, the 8th of September. Good to have you with us. So in a week heavy with news of jobs and the economy, this is, you could fairly say, the political day. Ben Bernanke gave a speech today that was just about as pointed as you're ever going to hear a central banker get. And, of course, the president's big jobs speech was tonight. So as we continue with the breakdown, that's our economy one step at a time, what political Washington had to say about a key economic problem. Our Washington bureau chief, John Dimsdale, starts us off with the president's speech. Hey, John.
Hello, Kai.
So $447 billion is the price tag. How's he going to spend it?
Yeah, that makes it about half the size of the stimulus plan that he signed more than 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really look all that different from that one. There's spending on construction projects, roads and schools. The president wants to extend government benefits to the unemployed. And the thinking there is that those are the people who will spend it right away and get it in circulation. He would give aid to states and local governments, saying teachers are being laid off in droves. He'd also wants to expand this year's payroll tax break for workers into another year and extend it to small companies that hire new workers or give existing workers raises. And all of these things, he said, are the best ways to create jobs.
It will provide a jolt to an economy that has stalled and give companies confidence that if they invest and if they hire, there will be customers for their products and services. You should pass this jobs plan right away.
And finally, he said that all these proposals will be paid for.
Yeah, make me smart on that. How's that going to happen?
Well, he said he's going to have some proposals later, but he's also putting the onus on that Joint Committee for Deficit Reduction that has to come up with the $1.5 trillion in cuts by December. That means that they're going to have to find more like $2 trillion worth of deficit savings.
Was there something there for the GOP that can make members vote for it, John?
Yeah, he said that these ideas have attracted bipartisan support in the past, that they shouldn't be controversial. He noted that businesses have been pushing for infrastructure spending, and he's going to cut red tape for businesses and pay government contractors more quickly.
Quickly, John, your sense of tone. He started right at the beginning by saying, you know what, people have been talking all day about how this is an Obama speech and it's a key thing, but it's really about the American people. Did that carry through the speech, do you think?
I think so. I mean, he is going for some pragmatic proposals here. He tried to set a moderate tone, but he was aggressive about millionaires and billionaires and oil companies have to be willing to sacrifice.
John Dimsdale in our Washington Bureau live with us talking about the president's speech tonight. More on the speech from regular old Americans coming up later in the broadcast. John, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kai.
Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke went to Minneapolis today for his speech. It was yet another chance for economists and investors and business journalists to read the tea leaves and get a sense of what the Fed chairman is thinking. Because of the two, the president and Ben Bernanke, Bernanke's the guy who's going to have an easier time actually getting something done, as Marketplace's David Gura reports.
When the Fed chairman speaks, there's no shortage of scintillating sound bites.
In addition to refining our forward guidance, the Federal Reserve has a range of tools that could be used to provide additional monetary stimulus.
That's Ben Bernanke all but saying the Fed could intervene in the economy some more. Economists say the Federal Reserve might do something more radical to get money circulating. Economist Kevin Jakes teaches at Baldwin-Wallace College.
The Federal Reserve would start to buy more and more long-term bonds, 10, 20, 30-year bonds.
And it would start to sell off short-term bonds.
What that would do is drive bond prices up and push those interest rates down.
Below the really, really low rates we have right now. Dean Mackey is chief U.S. economist at Barclays Capital. He says then investors might move into stocks.
Presumably that will push them either to go out into riskier assets or to spend that money.
The Federal Reserve's got a second option. It could cut the interest it pays banks on the trillions of dollars they stash at the Fed. It's at 0.25%. And Kevin Jakes says right now, that's a pretty good return.
If I am a bank and I have reason to believe I may need liquidity, and the central bank, the Federal Reserve, is paying me to keep the money as opposed to lending it out, then I have a financial incentive to keep more money than I otherwise would.
Without that incentive, banks would have to look for something else to do with all that money. They might just start lending it to businesses and folks like you and me. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
It's oh so easy to sit on the political sidelines and throw stones at the Fed or at the president. And as you can imagine, Republican presidential candidates pretty much have that wired. Last night at a debate in California, they test drove their ideas to create jobs, most of which can be filed under the letter G for get the government out of the way. From Washington Marketplace's Scott Tong has that story.
It's clear the preferred strategy for a GOP candidate is to quote Ronald Reagan. So it's a bit odd when conservative economist Richard Vedder at Ohio University talks up
Warren G. Harding, who absolutely did nothing. He drank a lot, played a lot of golf. Rumors had it he had quite a few girlfriends.
And we won't even touch that teapot dome stuff.
But he let markets work.
His point is, even Harding created growth and jobs by scooting the government out of the way of business. That's the mantra. Here's Texas Governor Rick Perry last night.
And we're going to lower the regulation impact on you and free them to do what they do best, create jobs.
He said government spending creates no jobs, which earns a split verdict from Wharton economist Justin Wolfers, now visiting at Princeton. Sure, he says, almost every economist agrees the government should balance its books.
But the idea that in the midst of near-record unemployment, that what we should do is cut back on government spending and fire more teachers and policemen is completely absurd. Never in my life have I seen a greater disjunction between the standard approach to economics and political discourse.
Another Republican job idea? Fossil fuel extraction. Oil, gas, coal. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney.
We can become energy secure, and we can create jobs right here in the United States by developing our own energy resources.
That is, if Romney gets to handcuff environmental regulators. MIT economist Michael Greenstone agrees clean air rules have hurt polluting companies. He counts 600,000 job losses. But
they were also effective at reducing air pollution, decreasing infant mortality rates, and even increasing home prices.
Another question about energy is how much of a job engine it really is, with machines replacing people. So there are costs and benefits. It's case by case. It's that professorly nuance that may not travel well in a campaign. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Wall Street was doing all right today until traders turned their televisions to that Bernanke speech. Then they kissed 100 points goodbye. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Most of the new jobs in this economy come from small and medium-sized businesses. The official number, courtesy of the Small Business Administration, is about 64% of net new jobs. Only right now, they're not creating any jobs. Nobody is, really, which is why we're getting all these plans from President Obama and GOP candidates and the Chamber of Commerce and economic think tanks and everybody else. There are, though, some small companies that have more business now than they did when the recession began. We sent Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman out from the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting to find a company that's hiring.
Oregon City is a working-class town with a smattering of industrial parks full of small to mid-sized manufacturers. Many have struggled to stay afloat, not Benchmade Knife Company, though.
Over here we go to our machining area.
founder and co-owner Les Diasis says people who visit the factory are often surprised knife making can be so clean.
So they expect anvils and sparks and dirt and grime. And what we have here is essentially a very modern computer-controlled manufacturing environment.
We step into Diasis's office and I ask, in this economy, who's buying Benchmade's products, essentially decked-out pocket knives, at hundreds to more than $1,000 a pop?
We sell a market of traditional hunters, sportsmen, first responders, medical, a military.
What do soldiers use the knives for?
A simple tool for a hunter when he's out in the field was purchased by an army medic to free trapped soldiers or people in overturned vehicles.
Those military sales helped the company ramp up employment after 9/11. Then, going into the recession, the company downsized.
We reduced down to about 130. Today, we're about 180.
That's more than a 30% increase in workers at a time layoffs were soaring nationwide. The company's also added a machine shop off-site. Diasis says the decision to keep hiring is driven by simple mathematics. Sales have been growing by double-digit rates to around $30 million a year.
Well, we get to a point you can only get so much productivity before you suffer burnout from overtime and, you know, the forced march. So we weigh each and every hire very carefully, but as long as the orders keep coming in, we want to fill them.
The company's also invested in the latest robotic machines to cut, grind, and polish the super-hard knife blades. Manufacturing manager Tony Koch says if you thought that would lead to layoffs as people are replaced by machines, you'd be dead wrong.
Adding automation into some of the more manual, repetitive tasks frees up those people to move on to, you know, some of the higher skilled, you know, less, you know, repetitive activities and then focus on additional product to provide us a growth opportunity.
Economist Bernard Baumol says an important growth opportunity for mid-sized firms is to cultivate foreign business.
That would certainly accelerate job growth because the export market is one of the most vibrant in the U.S. right now.
It's certainly vibrant for Benchmade. Diasis says exports are around 5% of sales and growing.
It was like 28% increase this year over last year and about 80% between this year and 3 years ago. So our most prolific markets are going to be Russia, Eastern Europe, and China. You know, they just rock.
America might not have the shiniest reputation right now for running an economy, but the Made in America brand still shines in the developing world. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Every time the president speaks, he's got a whole bunch of different audiences he's really talking to. There's members of Congress, interest groups and lobbyists, other politicians, and not to be forgotten, the 300 million people who live and, when they can, work in the American economy. We sat down to watch the speech tonight with four of those 300 million.
Hi, my name is Jay Damian. I'm 41. I've been unemployed for a year, and I owned a small business.
My name is Corey Ward. I am 38 years old, an office administrator, and I've been out of work for about a year and a half.
Hi, my name is Jeff Uslander. I'm a chemist. I've been out of work for about 3 months now.
My name is Maria Muniz. I'm 24 years old, and I haven't been able to get a steady job since I graduated college a year ago.
Jay Damian, let's start with you. What did you think of the speech?
I thought, again, he really didn't address too many of the issues at hand. I mean, he gave some ideas of what he wants to do, but I want more concrete definitions of what's really going to happen. For example, you know, my faith in America responsibility is completely gone. I've done what I was supposed to do. I've gone to college. I got excellent grades. I went to graduate school. I got excellent grades. And now I'm in this position, and the government is doing nothing to help me.
Sounds like you guys all did the right thing. I mean, Corey Ward, you went back to school after you got laid off. You got certified, and
yes,
yet nothing.
I have several certifications, actually. I can do anything from car maintenance repairs to servicing your diesel engine, as well as I have all kinds of certificates to work in a refinery or power plant, and I'm still unemployed.
Did the president say anything that gave you hope tonight?
As far as rebuilding everything, the roads, the transportation, construction industry, which is what I want to do because mm-hmm. I'm trying to change my career right now. But in the same sense, he's promising jobs. But when actually can we go to work?
Jeff Uslander, you're a chemist.
Yes.
You're 44 years old. You have a daughter. Correct. How's your spirit? How do you feel?
Well, I'm trying to remain hopeful, but it's tough. It's tough. And I don't see any future out of it, I mean, right now. But I think it's going to come, but it's just a matter of how.
Were you heartened or disappointed by what the president said?
It seems a lot like business as usual. I think that we're in a crisis and we need a shake. We need some shaking up. We need to shake the tree a little bit.
Maria Muniz, you're the youngest of the group. You're just out of school. Should be a fun, great time for you, but you sort of don't look like it's a fun, great time. Did you hear anything in the president's words tonight that made you think that it's going to be easier for you to find a job?
I think, like just with everybody else, I agree with the fact that he did make promises. He's still making promises, but I want to see more of a follow-up through with it. I went to college with hopes and dreams, just like everybody else, and when I graduated, the real world is not like the picture we thought it was going to be like, and it's really tough out there. And I'm glad that he did make an address towards education, because education is one aspect that, you know, the U.S. really needs to look at. America's educational system really needs a lot of help, but it's just a matter of time and actually seeing the product through and seeing results.
Jeff Uslander, you're nodding.
I am. I guess I think it's like that sticker that you see on the that you read sometimes on a car. It says, "When will a teacher be paid and be valued as much as fill in the blank?"
Jay Damian, the president talked a little bit, and I talked to John Dimsdale up at the top of the broadcast, of how he's going to pay for this. Are you worried at all about the debt that the government might be incurring as it tries to get the economy going again?
Of course. I mean, we're going to go deeper into a debt. He's talking about creating new loans for construction companies. Well, there are a lot of other loans that have gone into default. So what if these new loans go into default as well? Then what is he going to do?
What happens if this doesn't get better sometime soon? And Maria, we'll start with you.
I think that many more Americans, along with myself, will continue to be unemployed. There's jobs out there. People always are saying that. But to get the jobs, since it's not just you're competing with those people that graduated from college, you're competing with pretty much all of America.
Corey Ward.
I know that personally, people are not happy with the way that the situation is, and that if we don't do something quick, it's going to get ugly and get uglier than it already has.
Jay Damian.
I think I agree with everyone else. I think things are just going to get worse and more people are going to become unemployed. But when is it going to stop? And I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon. I mean, I feel that we're looking at another 4 or 5, maybe 6 years before things really start to turn around.
Jay Damian, Corey Ward, Jeff Uslander, and Maria Muniz, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having us here.
Coming up,
the consequences can be cool, but also very creepy.
Big Brother might really be watching, the economic legacy of September 11th. But first, let's do the numbers. Yeah, so this happened. The Dow Industrials dropped 119 points today, just over 1%, closed at 11,295. The NASDAQ slipped 19 points, about 0.75%, 25.29 at the bell. The S&P 500 down 12 points, a little more than 1%. Ended at 11.85. After spiking yesterday, financial stocks hit the skids again. Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase both lost 3.75%. Goldman Sachs ditched 3.25% today. Morgan Stanley coughed up an even 3%. Energy stocks ran out of gas as well. ConocoPhillips trickled down 2.1%. Chevron and ExxonMobil each drained about 1% today. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.97%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price, understanding the connections of a complex global economy. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence at TRoePrice.com. By Progressive Insurance, with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at Progressive.com. And by the American Payroll Association, thanking payroll professionals during National Payroll Week, September 5th through 9th. More at nationalpayrollweek.com. If you missed the broadcast, you can still catch Marketplace. Go to our website and click on Podcasts. You'll also find our new podcasts, The Midday Update, Freakonomics, and The Tech Report, all at marketplace.org.
from the Marketplace State Book. Here's a look at events coming up Friday. In Washington, the House Armed Services Committee discusses the current status of suicide prevention programs in the military. On September 9, 1975, the sitcom Welcome Back, Cotter began airing. And organizers around the country continue preparations for events commemorating the anniversary of 9/11. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. You know, just because it's a multi-gazillion dollar search engine company doesn't mean Google can ignore trends. One key online trend now is local. Everybody's doing it. So today, Google took another big step in that direction. It bought the restaurant review company Zagat. Yes, I used to call it Zagat, actually. The deal lands Google smack in the middle of the local restaurant review scene, as Sally Herships reports.
Google already lists restaurant reviews, and the company makes millions from the ads that appear alongside those search results. But Zagat goes beyond search. Colin Sebastian is an internet analyst at R.W. Baird. I caught up with him as he was heading into a meeting with Google.
I don't think this was necessary for them to continue growing their core business, but it helps them gain more of a foothold in the local market.
And more marketing dollars from local businesses, dollars that now go to sites like OpenTable, Yelp, and Yahoo. Sebastian says buying Zagat also brings more customer reviews to Google.
And that makes Google's search results more relevant, and that makes it more useful for those local searches.
John Greening teaches marketing at Northwestern. He says Google wants to use local content to stand out.
And then that audience stays loyal to Google.
Those who stay loyal to Zagat still need to pay $24.95 a year. Google says it has no plans to change Zagat's pricing. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Our coverage of the economic legacy of September 11th takes a turn to technology today and to the law of unintended consequences. Not long after the attacks, the federal government began investing heavily in new technologies, technologies that Washington said would make us safer as individuals and more secure as a nation. One of them was facial recognition research. Back then, it sounded futuristic or something out of James Bond, maybe. And then Facebook happened. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
A couple of weeks ago at a conference in Las Vegas, a professor from Carnegie Mellon University named Alessandro Acquisti showed me a neat trick. He takes out his iPhone and boots up a custom-made app. It's designed to take a picture of a person, any person. Then using a facial recognition program made by PitPat, the app compares that picture to profile photos published on Facebook. And bingo, the person's identity is revealed.
Can you take my picture and see if you can identify me?
We can try.
Yeah? 60 seconds later, Acquisti's iPhone has found me. It has my real name and a picture of me sitting with my two kids on the stoop of my old house in Washington, D.C. It also has scanned the web and found a picture of me at a cocktail party in Los Angeles, holding a martini with my arm around a colleague. This picture actually got me in trouble with my mother-in-law.
The combination of these technologies is bringing us closer to a world where online and offline data merge.
And when the online and offline worlds merge,
and the consequences can be cool, but also very creepy.
The app's creepiest trick comes next. It delivers its best guess at my social security number. In my case, it gets the number wrong. But if the app can figure out where you're born from scanning your Facebook page, it has a good shot of getting that number right. So how did we end up here? Fred Kate is a law professor and privacy guru at Indiana University. He says after 9/11, two independent trends dovetailed and reinforced each other. The federal government was investing hundreds of millions in surveillance technology and research to try and keep us safer. And companies like Google and Facebook were remaking the digital landscape. There was a data collecting revolution.
9/11 and the sort of huge growth in social networking and in profiling and collecting internet traffic, those are really parallel with each other.
And Kate says,
we have gotten more use to more surveillance. And it's not clear that that's just attributable to the events of 9/11. But particularly when you think about the types of security we go through now would have been pretty close to unthinkable a decade ago.
And some of the technologies that make this world possible only work today because of 9/11. Just take a look at facial recognition. It's one of the technologies that make Aquisti's app work. But 10 years ago, it didn't work very well at all. Michael Sipes is a vice president of PitPat.
So the intelligence community funded the early development of the technology because they had a problem. They're collecting information at a rate faster than they can process it and make use of it.
And facial recognition could help. Sipes' company spun out of a Carnegie Mellon lab that received hundreds of thousands of dollars in funding from ARPA, the intelligence community's research arm. In this industry, that same basic story plays out again and again. Professor Alan Yang helped create another powerful facial recognition program that can recognize people even when they're wearing glasses, masks, or hats that cover some of their features.
My research is funded by two grants. One is from the Army Research Office. Another one is from the Army Research Lab.
These investments after 9/11 created breakthroughs. Here's PitPat's Michael Sipes.
The technology, the face recognition technology, is just now really becoming reliable enough to be useful to a consumer.
And venture capitalists and tech giants noticed. Some of the most successful new companies in America today make their money collecting and analyzing data about us and using it to create new services or tailor ads aimed at our individual whims. Fred Kate says, just imagine if you were a car dealer. You could hook Aquisti's app up to your surveillance cameras, identify potential customers, and then check their incomes and credit ratings while they wandered around your lot.
These technologies only succeed in the market because people love them.
Alessandro Aquisti has no plans to sell his app or make it public. In fact, the prospect of that horrifies him. But Kate thinks the commercial pressure to use technology like this will be intense, and some of the biggest companies in America agree. PitPat was just bought by Google, but its technology only exists because of investments the government made in research in the wake of the attacks 10 years ago. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Best Buy for Business, always thinking of ways to help you get ready for business. More at bestbuyforbusiness.com. By FreshBooks, an online invoicing service for freelancers and small businesses designed to help save time, look professional, and make invoicing easy. More at FreshBooks.com. And by Putnam Investments, focused on finding opportunities one stock at a time. On the web at putnam.com/largecapequity. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, a somewhat distressing sign of the economic times, direct from Bentonville, Arkansas. Walmart said today it's bringing back layaway payment plans. The world's biggest retailer got rid of layaways 5 years ago, that is, before the economy went south, because so many people were using credit cards to finance things. Walmart says its customers are feeling the pinch once again and need a little help to buy what they want without going into debt, which is, I suppose, the upside of that whole thing. All right, that's it. We got to go. That's Marketplace from APM American Public Media on this Thursday. Ben Adair, John Buckley, Nancy Fargali, Stephen Gregory, John Haas, Patty Hirsch, Jonathan Karp, Betsy Streisand, and Lisa Tucker are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is George Judson. You can tune into the Marketplace Morning Report tomorrow for more of the breakdown. That is our economy one step at a time. And coming up next time back here on The Big Show, our week of jobs comes to a close with this question. After all the speeches and position papers and job plans, now what do we do? I'm Kai Rizdahl. I do hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM. That's American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.